Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Tony, Rick is still out. So we have another special guest this week. We have Ben Werman. Ben, thank you so much for joining. Looking forward to the conversation. We're going to hop right into the news here. First and foremost, it appears as though Tesla has stacked more Bitcoin. So while Elon is playing around with Doge on two fronts, their previous number of known coins was 9720, and now they're up to 11,500, a little over 11,500. So interesting to see all of the distractions that Elon throws around in crypto and with Doge the coin, and Tesla seems to be stacking Bitcoin. Ben, why don't you take this one first? Just spend a couple minutes telling us what you think, what the implications of this might be.
I mean, I just hope that all the ping-ponging around he's done on Bitcoin for years has just been a net good for people like hearing about it and thinking about it, which it's hard to say that isn't the case, because anytime you just have Bitcoin put on your radar, it makes you at least think about, oh, what is this thing? So, I mean, obviously he's been all over the place and you know, what he's talking about, his views on it, he goes all over, but I do think that this is just a good thing for more people hearing about it. He obviously has such a massive following of people on Twitter following him now and just hearing all these updates. So, yeah. But there's another company that's going to be buying even more than him soon. So I can't wait to talk about that one later.
Yeah, well, don't worry. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. Tony, why don't you tell me your thoughts?
Yeah, man, this is institutional FOMO into Bitcoin. It's expected at this stage. You know, everybody's going to want a piece of that pie, whatever little amount is left. It's good news and it's bad news at the same time. It's good news, of course, for the institutions because, you know, they understand what this is and they're going to, you know, capitalize on it as much as possible. It's bad news for the retards in the population that, are still asleep on Bitcoin. You know, the very money that was created for them, they're like busy doing, you know, God knows what useless activity that they're focusing on right now, instead of focusing on protecting and securing their freedoms and their futures. So I've got mixed feelings about this. I mean, those that who understand Bitcoin are in it now, proper self-custody and all, of course, they're going to benefit tremendously. That shift in generational wealth is going to make eyes melt. It's something that we've never seen before. But, you know, I've said it before, the wrong people understand Bitcoin. You know, like it was created for 8 billion people, but there's 8 billion people that are like comatose and, you know, not focusing on anything useful financially. That's the part that I find extremely disappointing. But is it good for Bitcoin? Absolutely, man. It's for everyone, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So if you're in Bitcoin today, holding it in proper self-custody, you're going to be on the glorious side of this journey. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to be, you know, wishing you were very, very soon.
Yeah, I agree. I think that people are going to, because of these sorts of stories, us commoners are going to get less Bitcoin because it's going to drive the price up and all that. I will say, you know, taking a step back and looking at like who I was before I found Bitcoin, it took these sorts of stories to lead me to study crypto and then to figure out that it was Bitcoin and not crypto. And so while at times I can be a bit cynical about, you know, billionaires adopting Bitcoin and institutional adoption, and I get very frustrated with number grow up being the only thing that anyone cares about anymore, I still need to appreciate that it's these sorts of moments that people maybe revisit the topic of Bitcoin and maybe revisit the topic of crypto and then eventually get wrecked and they learn, you know, the right thing. But at least they're one step closer to sort of an understanding of how money works and why it's broken and why we need Bitcoin. So, bullish. I agree with you, though. Wish it was someone else who didn't already have everything in the entire world that they possibly needed finding Bitcoin first. Alrighty, let's talk about the London gold shortage. So this is in Zero Hedge. I can't believe it, but I didn't notice that till this morning, but via shiftgold.com. So we're giving Peter Schiff a shout out. Don't take any of his investment advice, that's for sure. But basically, the long story short is there's a London gold shortage, and it's a symptom of global economic anxiety. So as I read through the article, basically the takeaway here is that U.S. holders of gold, and by holders, I don't mean the way that we self-custody Bitcoin, but those who have claims to gold in London are paying the transportation, security, insurance costs to get their gold out of London and into the United States, into what they perceive to be safer, a safer area to hold gold. And basically, their sense is, again, they're going through a great deal of headache and expense to do this. Their sense is that there is going to be economic turmoil, higher inflation. That's the impression that many, some of the smart money, so to speak, folks are under. So, Tony, you have, you've seen this play out, people panicking and sort of in the sensing that maybe something is amiss. What's your takeaway, and why should they be moving Bitcoin into self-custody instead of gold?
If I was a gold holder right now, I'd be like freaking out, because this type of panic I've seen before, but like in my country's local currency, when the panic sets, things break very, very fast. And if this is what's starting to happen with gold, good luck to anyone holding that that shiny yellow rock, because things are about to go south really, really fast. If they're moving it, first of all, from London to the US, like you said, this is like a massive cost. So for most people, I'd suspect this can't possibly be a profitable decision, unless you're sitting on like a monumental amount of gold, where it's worth maybe moving it from, across the ocean somewhere else. I don't know how you remain profitable in that sense. The other thing, if there's a shortage, that means like, has anyone ever audited that exchange holding the gold in the first place? Like, were they selling paper gold, for a while? Not that everybody wants their gold back. Maybe they don't have it, so that leads to another rabbit hole. Do things break even more because of that? Like, who knows? And what's to say it's going to be safer in the US? Has anyone audited Fort Knox? Like, where are they going to store it?
Yeah, I think there are a number of probably centralized locations. Some maybe wealthier people have their own private vaults or whatever, but that's I imagine a small minority. But you raise an interesting point, and that's sort of the question here. I remember hearing, I think it was Larry Lepard talking about the receipts on gold are like 100 to 1, it's been reapothecated, and so I don't know. That's sort of a general number across the globe. I don't know how that applies directly to the London gold market, but I would have to imagine that there are gold bars that are missing, filled with tungsten, or otherwise, you're not getting for the value out of the receipt that you have for it. So, a lot of interesting. And this is the whole this was the whole problem with gold. It's centralizing nature, it's inauditability, and it feels like, people are still running to this relic of the past that failed them, years and years and years ago. Ben, what do you think, man?
Yeah, just going off what you just said right there, it's just such a great example of how, the Bitcoiners knew this. We've studied the history, we know that this is what happened with gold already, but a lot of people need to have it really slap them in the face or their wallet for it to really kick in, that this is old technology. Like, this is showing them very clearly that this is old tech. It no longer works in this modern, globalized world where things need to move around quickly. And when you're not self-custody, the amount of space between feeling comfortable and being in panic mode is extremely slim. When all of this is over in some mystery location and some mystery amount, it's just not efficient. And I think that the fact that we now have these dominoes starting to fall, and we have such a global media stream where everyone could be watching this at once, it'll be a very quick lesson, and hopefully lots of people that aren't being directly affected by it will see it as well and just be able to skip the yellow rocks phase and go straight to Bitcoin.
I wish they had like video footage of the gold bars being loaded onto ships or a jet or something, so that way we could juxtapose it with someone like sending a Lightning transaction.
Right.
We'd be like, Here's how they send gold. Here's how we send our money. And
that's a viral clip right there. You should make that. That'd be great.
Choose your horse, and I guarantee you ours is the fastest. But it's funny though. Like, Tony, you talked about the shiny yellow rock, and like that's our way of mocking the gold bugs. And to them, it's still Bitcoin's still magic internet money, right? And I think that's the point. It is magic internet money. I don't view that as something to be insulted by. I think it solves all of the problems that they're trying to solve with literally a piece of rock. So,
the thing is these people are hiding behind the 5,000 year time frame behind gold, right? So for them, if it's lasted this long, there cannot possibly be anything else to displace it. Which is ludicrous. So, you know, they're avoiding, you know, they're just avoiding Bitcoin just based on this, you know, silly premise. But like you said earlier, how do you know that the gold is actually gold and not that fake tungsten, right? And if they're going to be moving all of these things, one, I don't think it's profitable for most people. Second of all, there's going to be a transaction log file of that movement, right? Like who is it for and where it's headed? Can you imagine that thing being leaked or, you know, falling into the wrong hands and people finding out where some folks are physically storing their gold? And imagine that being like at home, for example, like what kind of chaos that could potentially lead to? You're talking about a physical attack. People worry about Bitcoin physical wrench attacks. Can you imagine knowing somebody is hoarding gold in his basement, what kind of attack that's going to look like?
Yeah.
This thing opens a whole can of worms. Like, we should have invited Peter Schiff here to see how he feels about this and what he's going to be doing with his gold. Is he putting it under his couch? You know, like where's he hiding it?
Yeah, man, it's a fair question. It's funny that like the gold bugs really, they understand their history. Like they wouldn't be sound money people if they didn't, but they seem to just completely forget that the 6102 attack is real. And it's pretty recent in terms of history. On top of that, we live in a very different globalized economy than the Roman Empire or, you know, any other ancient civilization on a gold standard when that was your best option. Like we do need more instantaneous settlement. We need the ability to, show verification of funds, like all of those things that you just can't readily do with gold. So, we're sort of getting sidetracked on, I still think maybe the biggest takeaway from all this, besides gold being an inferior form of money, is the people who own gold, who understand sound money and probably agree with us on 90% of things minus Bitcoin, are anticipating economic turmoil. And they're taking on the cost and risk of transporting their gold back to what they perceive to be a more secure location because of that. So I think we've got fireworks ahead for the next 10 years because the people who I still agree with on many, you know, things in principle seem to be on board with the Bitcoiners that something is amiss economically. All right, let's move on to the next one. Tony, I'm going to have you talk about this. So Mononaut said that the mempool is a ghost town. So not a lot of transactions. We have a lot of unfilled blocks. Why don't you explain what that means, Tony, first, just for anyone who maybe isn't familiar with the mempool, and then what about it maybe concerns you?
Man, it's a little freaky to watch a mempool that's completely dead, right? I mean, usually people associate a busy mempool with, you know, people transacting on the network. Now, an empty Bitcoin mempool doesn't necessarily mean that no one is transacting. It just means that there's very low network activity. Like things could still be happening like off-chain, for example, on Lightning and what have you. Or, you know, you have some argument saying that, look, Bitcoin is scaling so amazingly, just clearing out all the activity that's going on. I think, and I don't like seeing an empty mempool. I think what's also starting to happen is, you know, people are sticking by this whole Bitcoin is a store of value. And like nobody's, you know, budging from it. Like whoever's buying Bitcoin is sitting on it for the next 1,000 years in their head, right? Like they don't want to touch it. But the thing is, Bitcoin as a store of value alone will fail. You know, that's it's a known fact by now. And if you don't know it, you should know it. The way Bitcoin remains decentralized is by being a medium of exchange. You know, if it stays as a store of value uniquely, there's 100 ways, you know, bad actors can manipulate and co-opt and do all sorts of stupidities on the network. The only way you break that is by using it as money. And I think people pushing the narrative of store of value, I don't think have good intentions. Now, you can argue that money usually starts as a store of value and then finds its way into medium of exchange and then uses it as account. But I don't get the sense that this is what's happening now. I think there's a very like concerted effort to really push forth and cement the store of value message around Bitcoin to incentivize the medium of exchange. Because if that were to become popular, well, then the existing system collapses in 5 minutes. Like imagine 8 billion people realize that Bitcoin is money and that they absolutely don't need the dollar or any other local fiat currencies. Within 15 minutes, everything blows up. So there's a very real effort not to let that happen. And that's why you have to be very careful about when you read people's messaging. You know, like listen to what they're really writing and why they're saying or writing what they are, right? Think about like what are their incentives to push one side over another. As far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin medium of exchange must happen. If you're in Bitcoin, spend and replace. Don't buy this BS that you have to sit on it for the next 1,000 years. Yes, it's an amazing store of value for sure. And people will tend to want to spend, you know, the bad money before the good money, which is what seems to be happening now, you know, with the whole excitement over borrowing against your Bitcoin and all that. But that just extends the lifeline of a corrupt and broken system. You know, like that's not what you want. But what if everybody is only thinking of themselves, you know, oh, I want to become rich, I want to have a good life, blah, blah, and you forget about the whole reason why Bitcoin was created, well, then you're just going to make things worse for everyone and delay the inevitable, right? So you have to be very careful with these narratives and the perception that people are having. But, you know, you can't control people's mindsets. Human nature intends to be me, 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 rather than the collective. And you can even see this on Twitter. Like, where's the old cypherpunk movement, you know, that existed 15 years ago, especially on social media? Where are all these people? Now, all I read about, oh, yeah, the ETFs bought thousands of Bitcoin. Oh, yeah, and this institution bought thousands of Bitcoin. Like, who cares about these people? That's not what Bitcoin is for, right? Where are the people? Where's the people's movement for Bitcoin? Where's the, you know, separation of money and state narratives? Like, where are all these conversations? They all seem to be gone now. Because why? Because everybody's relying on that number go up. Oh, yeah. Sailor bought 20,000. BlackRock bought 20,000. All right, great. What does that mean? It means all you're thinking of is when is Bitcoin going to hit $1 million, because you think you're going to become a millionaire and live a happy life. That's the only reason you get excited over news like this. And you completely forget what Bitcoin was created for. So again, mixed feelings about this. So that's my two cents on this.
Yeah, I'm sort of two minds on this, because on one hand, I fall into the camp of hodling Bitcoin is using Bitcoin. Because I use it as a savings vehicle, right? Like that is using Bitcoin. On the other hand, I completely agree with you. I think my concern, if we don't begin pushing Bitcoin as a medium exchange sooner, we're going to have alternatives presented to us, like, you know, a Bitcoin-backed stablecoin that is, you know, from a centralized service provider, highly censorable, very easy for governments to regulate and co-opt. And we're already seeing that with some recent, I think they were executive orders, but certainly talk within Washington. So I guess my point is, I view hodling Bitcoin for me personally as like the most important use case today, because I view it as my long-term savings. But I also think that Bitcoin fails to achieve its potential and we're probably at risk of more fiat games for a longer stretch of time if we don't get this medium of exchange use case down. Ben, why don't you maybe comment on that? I'd be curious to hear your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have always sort of erred toward the store value side. So I love hearing Tony's rant on the opposite side. You make a ton of great points. I think that's like the best case you could make for why we do need to like shift to medium of exchange. But I guess my argument for why I still do love the store value message to share with a lot of people and like hodl myself, like you said, Michael, is that like you talked about, Tony, the people who are in the store value camp talk about how naturally it will move to medium exchange later. And the article I always point back to is Vijay Boyapati's bullish case for Bitcoin, which I think is one of the greatest Bitcoin articles ever. It talks about those natural phases of money, how store of value comes first, and later, once the price has gone up a lot, then it naturally, organically turns into medium of exchange. Now, the question, I guess, would be, you know, would it be smart for us as Bitcoiners with access to all this communication and knowledge to maybe like speed that process up and go to medium exchange a little bit faster than it normally has throughout history? Would that be good for the current state of the world we're in? And that, I think, is an interesting question, because like you said, there are, you know, there could be downsides if we wait for this like perfectly organic process to happen, because it'll take longer. So I think it really just depends on who you're talking to and what people's situations are. And, you know, I think, I'm sure you guys are the same, that to me, the most important thing to be doing right now is just educating the masses on this stuff and trying to talk to everyone. And certain people will have different pain points. You know, they may be, just be completely destroyed by inflation and they need a place to store their value. And for them, I would talk about store value. And there are other people who are, you know, just trying to, you know, transact easily and do more transactions. And in these circular economies are starting to pop up all over. And for them, medium exchange is perfect. And there, you don't have to choose only one. I think just having both of those in the conversation at all times is helpful. But yeah, it is an interesting one. With, like you said, Michael, it's, I'm in both camps on this. There isn't really like a right or wrong answer. It's all sort of, you know, what do we think is optimal? And it's just good that this is still in the conversation. Everyone can sort of discuss it and figure out what the best way
right.
to promote
right.
it is.
Education is a must. The problem is most of the general population is so far from anything common sense when it comes to money that, you know, if we're going to wait for that, holy cow, man, you can wait another 500 years and just move half an inch, right? Like it's a very slow process. The other concern I have is something we spoke about last time, is with this incentivized push of stable coins, right? I mean, if you're trying to get people to get used to stable coins, let's, for example, like USDT and all that, right? Well, what is a stable coin? It's like a digital dollar on a superficial level. But if you think of it, really, what is that? It's a central bank digital currency that just hasn't been weaponized yet. So there's also a narrative pushing that, you know, as use this, it's important. We're going to use that on the Bitcoin network, blah, blah, blah. But that's not Bitcoin, right? And so if you move people, you know, distract people by something like this to make them think it's like a better option, well, it's, in a way, you can think of it as entrapment, because that thing can be switched on any second and then everything changes, right? So be very careful for like the with what you wish for, and people are getting comfortable very quickly with just things to make their lives easier. That's a very dangerous decision to make and a position to put yourself in, because that can and will flip on you on a dime, you know, under the right circumstances. And I've seen that happen, which is why I don't trust it whatsoever.
Yeah, I think what we need most of all right now are small business owners being orange-pilled who say, I'm going to provide haircuts, I'm going to provide automotive repair, I'm going to provide, you know, groceries, whatever it is, in exchange for Bitcoin. Because there are, like, I've got so, like, I live within 5 minutes of everything I need, grocery store, pharmacy, you know, all those things. And if they accepted Bitcoin, I would 100% spend and replace, like, without a doubt. I would love to support that movement. I think the challenge is, you know, getting enough of those people on board and recognizing that, you know, there are solutions out there. And Tony, that's maybe another comment. I don't want to linger on this topic longer than necessary, but like the Lightning Network is a real solution that maybe is sort of obscuring how much transacting is happening within Bitcoin, so to speak. You know, maybe the empty mempool means a lot less selling. Like we've done a lot of the consolidation and that could be positive, you know, here, at least for number go up, we'll see, you know, what else, but hopefully I think I heard Preston Pish talking to Luke Groman about this recently, about the Lightning Network specifically. And, he seems very happy with the growth of the number of transactions, happening there. So realistically, I think those layer twos are where medium of exchange needs to be, like that's where it's scalable. That said, we have a ways to go on that, on the technology, you know, more self-custodial options, that sort of thing. But I think I'm with you. I share your concerns, and certainly agree with the sentiment that we've lost sort of the cypherpunk nature of Bitcoin. I think people are hodling, just hoping to become rich, and they're forgetting that this enables censorship-free transactions and self-sovereignty and all of those benefits. It's not just about, you know, long-term wealth. That's an aspect of self-sovereignty. So couldn't agree more. Let's jump into the next one. So Ben, you're going to have to take this one first, because this is all about you, brother. Okay, so Ryan Cohen, CEO of GameStop, was seen with Michael Saylor. He met with Michael Saylor. Ben, you were on the podcast just a few weeks ago, and you talked about your portfolio that I laughed at, because I said if I tried to explain your investment thesis to anyone in my life, they would think you were insane. Why don't you explain the significance of this picture and why you're excited about it?
Yeah, man, I love everything about this, because I knew this was coming, and this is just one of the unpopular opinions I've had as a Bitcoiner for years now. And I this is the question you asked me when we did our podcast together. basically, since 2021, when pretty much everyone followed the whole GameStop story back then, where things were really crazy and they turned off the buy button, and there's, you know, what everyone thought was a short squeeze. I don't think that was a short squeeze, but it just has so many things going for it. And it's such a huge, to me, I view this as the fiat stock market finale, where there is just so much riding on this, and the math is so hard in the right direction, where the shorts just shorted too hard and they're still stuck there, I believe, significantly. I think that many times the float is still short over. And what the Bitcoiners will say is like, oh, I mean, it's fiat world, so you're never going to get this squeeze. It's never going to happen. The MOAS is never going to happen, because they just won't let it happen. But I think that it's just so big, and there are enough big players in on that side, that something's going to pop at some point. And now the second layer of this, where Bitcoin comes in, they have $4.5 billion cash and no debt. So this is what I've been banging the drum on, just spamming Ryan Cohen, the CEO, for years now, just saying, buy Bitcoin with this, buy Bitcoin with this. What are you doing? Because they have the ability to instantly vault into the number two position, like right behind MicroStrategy, passing Mara. And that would just be absolutely insane. And the fact that he just posted this picture with Michael Saylor, and Michael Saylor followed Ryan Cohen, by the way, that tells me that they had some sort of meaningful conversation. And I'm so bullish on it, because once they do that, which I'm still holding strong that Ryan Cohen's going to figure this thing out, it's going to be a wild story. It's going to be off to the races for both of them, because I mean, that's a huge sum of money they have just to yeet into this thing. Even if it's just a portion, I would think still put $1 or $2 billion in there would be a big deal, a big story, and it would help the all the shareholders, which are an extremely passionate base of shareholders, and it would be a huge boost for the Bitcoin world as well, just accelerating that corporate adoption. So I'm just super excited about it. I can't wait to see what happens. Yesterday, stock went up 10%. It's green again today. This is just all good news. And the market is starting to really love seeing Bitcoin adoption. And I'm stoked.
So there's no topic that excites me less these days than institutional adoption, just because we talk about it so much. But I'm very happy for you, Ben. I hope it works out. Tony, I'm just going to warn you. I'm going to hand the baton to Tony, and he might rail on you for playing fiat games with
GameStop.
Bring
me your worst, Tony. Let's hear it. Bring it on.
No, man, you can do whatever you want. I mean, if you want to gamble, you gamble. You want to drink, you drink. You know, it's a free world. You know, your life, your decisions, your consequences. Again, it goes back to the first topic we spoke on. If you're holding Bitcoin, you're sitting, you know, on the sidelines, just waiting all this, watching all this corporate insanity go on, you are in for a spectacular end result. That is for sure. The only disappointment, I'll restate it now, is that I was just hoping that more retail would benefit from this once-in-a-lifetime revolution. But it seems like, people are just, I don't know, maybe genetically programmed not to benefit from things, you know, when it's just glaring, staring them in the face. I tried to find logic and reason behind this type of behavior. I just couldn't. And I, at some point, you know, you have to Like take a step back so you don't drive yourself too crazy. I mean, we're doing what we can here at the Bitcoin Way to try to push the education as strongly as possible, but you can't help anyone who doesn't want to help themselves. So, but for everybody else who gets it, you know, congratulations. I mean, whether it's a corporation or a government or whatever it may be, Bitcoin is Bitcoin, and whoever understands it is absolutely going to benefit from it. And congratulations to everyone who is already on Satoshi's Ark. You know, there's you did the work. You know, you reap the benefits. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, Ben, maybe the reason you lean toward Bitcoin as a store of value first is because you really need that to come through. If Ryan Cohen doesn't adopt Bitcoin, you've got to have
probably.
That. Like, Bitcoin is really your plan B if GameStop doesn't pan out.
I mean, I just know that they're both going up. That's all that matters. But yeah, Bitcoin will always be the end game. That is the thing. But the point that I need to mention there is this idea that, you know, GameStop adopting Bitcoin would only be a corporate benefit is ridiculous. Because if you look at just the subreddit where people are, you know, talking about the GameStop stock right now, it's called Super Stonk, and there's 1.1 million people on there. That's only like the hardcore Redditor. So there are millions of GameStop shareholders who are watching this story every single moment. And the vast majority of them, literally probably 99%, are not Bitcoiners. So they're seeing this, they're learning about Bitcoin through this, they're gaining interest in it, and they're opening their minds and learning about Bitcoin. So this is the ultimate like retail education push, and it's going to get more people into Bitcoin than pretty much anything else I can imagine at very quickly, just by someone posting a picture online. So that's a huge benefit to it. And I think that there's going to be so much interesting people brought into this conversation because of this collaboration that we see between potentially Saylor and Ryan Cohen. And if they do make that official purchase announcement, it's going to just blow the internet up. Because like, when you bring the GameStop community and the Bitcoin community together, it's going to be such a huge movement of people who are now ready to learn about Bitcoin in a big way. And I definitely don't expect Bitcoiners to, you know, like go into GameStop at this point in the game. What I'm most focused on is bringing the GameStop people into Bitcoin. That's what I've been trying to do for years. And if you go back on any of my old tweets, that's been my personal crusade for the last several years, is to tell them stop, like, because they were doing like NFTs and stuff. And I was saying, no, this is the wrong way. You need to learn about Bitcoin. You need to get Bitcoin. You need to buy Bitcoin. And so like that is sort of where most of their mind are still at in the crypto phase. We just have to push them over the edge. And we've got millions of really awesome, good people who are just still stuck in that crypto phase to learn about Bitcoin. It's going to be incredible.
Oh man, this is right, definitely, man. Bullish for Bitcoin. I don't think people realize the insane supply shock that's about to hit any day now. Like, when I mean literally any day now, it's because of all these big players that are coming in to a tiny little pool of remaining Bitcoin, right? I mean, there's only so much OTC wizardry you can do before you have to hit, you know, the global supply of Bitcoin, which is almost nil at this point. So when you hear 4 billion here and 4 billion there and hundreds of billions there, like, just do the math, man. You can wake up one day and have a heart attack when you look at the fiat price of Bitcoin, and you're going to realize what just happened. Poof, it's gone. No more, you know?
Yeah. All the models will be broken. I think we all know that time is coming, and the more of these stories we have, the better.
Any day now, man. Any day. I'm just waiting for it.
I'm ready for the power law thing to go away. Not because I think they're wrong, or I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I just don't care, and I'm just tired of seeing it online. So I'm ready for all models to be broken, and I can only dream of a day that no new models are created, and we can just let Bitcoin do what it does. All righty, guys. Last one. This one will be short. Tony, I think this is like the third or fourth time we've talked about this in the last few weeks, but I have a podcast episode coming out on Friday. I think it's Friday, in just a few days, with Econo Alchemist and Scott from BitAx, where we dive into solo mining. So another solo miner has mined an entire Bitcoin block worth $300,000. I mean, the odds of this are crazy. But to me, what is promising is that there seem to be enough solo miners out there that they're squeezing in and finding a block here or there. And Tony, I know we've got some probably some exciting news to announce here in the near future to help support this effort to really bring decentralized or bring decentralization rather to mining, because I think that's one of Bitcoin's weakest spots right now is the decentralization of the mining space. Why don't you just give a quick comment and then we'll round for home here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. This is extremely exciting. This is the third one in what, like 10 days, something like that. This is crazy. Yeah. We're going to be pushing solo mining, you know, heavily. I'm a big, you know, proponent for this. I want to see, you know, almost every individual have a plug and play solo miner plug somehow in their household, doing, you know, their part to, you know, for Bitcoin mining, just to offset any, you know, bad actor possibilities in the bigger centralized mining farms. But the fact that, you know, every few days now you hear solo miner hitting a block, this is exciting news. Like, can you imagine you're buying one of these solar miners for like $200-$300 and then you wake up one day on a flashing screen, you know, that you've just hit 3.125 BTC? I don't think many people will sleep once they put one in their house. You know, they'll be looking at it 24/7.
That's amazing. I hope you're right. I told Scott, I said, man, your slogan should be a bit axe in every home, because I think that's the mission they seem to be on. And I'm excited to see that, like, as each of these happen, it really does hopefully make people more excited that I should be doing this. Like, why not buy a $200 device, throw my hat in the ring and see if maybe it works. And, you know, maybe there's a big payday down the road. Ben, what do you think about the whole solo mining thing?
Yeah, I'm super happy for the miner and even happier for the optics of it. Like you said, just the fact that this is really proving that this could be you, you know, join this decentralized mining movement. And more people are talking about, you know, these different options we have to implement the heating aspect as well in our lives. I was trying to just pull up the Nosfer post that Jameson Lott made, I think it was last night or the night before, basically asking, you know, what are the businesses that are creating these solutions to turn mining into like hot tubs and saunas and stuff like that? Because we can really make this a new seamless integration into home building and, you know, all these different things that people are already using that require heat. And if you can really bring those two together, then there's just tons of cool options out there where people can just get win-wins all over the place as they're building their homes.
Dude, I completely agree. That was one of the things I asked the guys about on this podcast was, because they're obviously building miners for the sake of mining Bitcoin. But I was like, there has to be a day where I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, where I can call up my HVAC guy and be like, hey, I want to swap out my, you know, my gas furnace and I want to heat my house with Bitcoin miners. And like, they've got repair technicians, they've got a supply chain to, you know, acquire parts when things break and whatever. And I think we're a little ways off from that, but dude, that is like, to me, that just seems like the next logical phase of Bitcoin mining. And I think the guys who I interviewed for this, they don't see like these big farms of miners, you know, giant warehouses full of you know, S19s or whatever model they're on now, is like the future of Bitcoin mining. Like, without some of the sort of marketing, they think those business models would have failed already and will fail in the future. And so I'm hopeful that like the transition into you know, a Bitcoin future means a decentralized mining front. And we'll just have to sort of wait and see. It's not an area of expertise I have, so I don't think there's a lot I can do but buy a bit axe or, you know, keep an eye out for how I could potentially heat my home with, hey, Tony, when I get a swimming pool for my wife,
Bitcoin goes to the moon. I think the future of mining will be, you know, like a customized AI doll that also mines Bitcoin, you know?
You and the AI dolls.
An all-in-one function.
Oh my goodness. All righty. Well, guys, hey, Ben, before I wrap this up, why don't you tell people where they can find you, give them a handoff, and then we'll close out.
Yeah, man. The podcast, which is just called the Ben Werman Podcast, and I'm on Nostr. I'm on Twitter at Ben Werman, spelled WEHRMAN. Of course, Nostr is the future, so I push people there first. I really believe that's going to be an amazing innovation. And we'll make Tony happy with this one. There's lots of Medium Exchange on there. People are zapping all day. So you can go get all of your Medium Exchange in. And it's incredible. That is the perfect place to show the Medium Exchange concept, where, you know, the amount of zaps people are throwing around is sometimes quite substantial. And people are really using that as this Venmo replacement in a lot of ways, which I have also done, just trying to get people to get on there so they can see, like, look, I can send you Bitcoin super easily. So yeah, Noster, Twitter, podcasts, CRM, lots of stuff going on.
I love it, man. Thank you. For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. As always, you can go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast if you want to learn more about our services. We help with 100% proper self-custody of your Bitcoin, online privacy, privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Make sure to check it out. Ben, thank you for your time today. Tony, as always, it was a pleasure. We'll catch up again later in the week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, man. Awesome. This was awesome.
Cheers, guys.